Hey y'all, this is Sam, and this is Crimeology. This is episode 144, and yet again, we are without Steven. So before we get started, make sure to do all of the things. Facebook, Instagram are both at CrimeologyPod. Our email is CrimeologyPod@gmail.com. Make sure to rate, review, 5 stars, share, do all of those things. We've talked about numbers. We are, I think, 400 plays away from hitting 30,000 plays, which is fun and crazy. When we look at numbers, Steven and I always have this moment where, and it happened when we first started this podcast, where we started posting about it, you know, and started to get friends and like family members who would say something to us. But then after that point, like it was always, it would like catch us off guard when somebody was like, hey, like your podcast was really good. And you're like, what? Like you forget that other people in the world can hear it. And so when we see numbers like 30,000, or it also shows us like how many a week we get. And so when you're seeing 200, 300, like those numbers are wild that like other people out in the world listen to us week by week. So like, thank you guys just so much for like the vanity side of me comes out when I'm like, I get like excited because I'm like, those numbers are just so cool and they stay that way. So it makes, you just make me feel cool. Okay. So thanks for making me feel cool. So with that all being said, let's just jump into this week's episode. This is episode 144, Susan Smith. So this week's state is South Carolina. Another case that we've already covered for this week's state is Kaylee Anthony. Now, before we get to the fun facts about South Carolina, I realized that the last 2 weeks I haven't selfishly plugged in other cases that we've already covered for other episodes. And the reason I plug these in, besides being selfish, is because sometimes we've already covered the top case from that state. So I may do a case that you've never heard about if you live from that state. And so you may be saying like, yo, what the heck? Like, what is this girl doing? Like, I've never heard about this case. And it's probably because you haven't, because most of the top popular cases we've already covered. And so now I'm just trying to find like basically any case that's kind of semi-popular from that state. This episode isn't one of those states, but that's just a little example of why I do that. So from Oregon, which was episode 142, other cases we've covered from that state are O.J. Simpson and B.D. Cooper. And then for Kansas, which was episode 143, other cases we've covered are the BTK killer. Now, fun facts about South Carolina. Their state fruit is the peach, which was news to me because I always hear peach and I think of a Georgia peach. But according to Google, most of the peaches in the U.S. come from South Carolina, so the more you know. Their state reptile is the longer-head turtle, and then also, according to Google, so I don't know how much, like, how true this is, but there was a document that comes with it, so that should say it's true. South Carolina was named in honor of King Charles I, so the more you know. So this week, we're talking about Susan Smith. So we're going to start with talking about Susan's childhood, because this is said to have a lot to do with how Susan is now as an adult. So Susan was born in South Carolina, and at a very young age, her father committed suicide. And then after that, her stepfather started to abuse her for years. So from this abuse, she suffered from depression, and she even attempted to take her own life multiple different times. And so from everything that Susan had experienced as a child, we see how this affects specifically her romantic relationships, but also how she finds herself just in not great situations in general. So Susan meets David Smith when they're in their early 20s. They make the decision to get married after becoming pregnant with their first child, Michael. And then a few years later, they have their second child together, Alex. Their relationship was rocky and was a frequent on and off again relationship. They were both known to start other relationships with other people during that off time that would then seep into the time that they were together. So just a very toxic and just not best of relationships to begin with, when you go out and you're partying, you're drugging, you're drugging. You're partying, you're doing drugs, you're hooking up with other people when you're not with your wife. And then when you come back together and you're with your wife, that stuff seeps through. And so it was like they were living these double lives, and then, but you're also, it's like seeping through to your relationship. So anyways, just not the best relationship. And then also adding two young children into the mix just wasn't the best. So during one of their off times, Susan starts a relationship with Tom Findlay. Tom was known as the most eligible bachelor in the area, so he was hot stuff. And Susan fell in love with Tom. She thought he was perfect for her. She thought he had a good head on his shoulders, and she realized that maybe the relationship that she could have with Tom would be better for her emotionally than her relationship with David. So she is just head over heels for Tom. Tom, on the other hand, wasn't on the same page. He first off wasn't ready to settle down anytime soon. He also didn't want to settle down with somebody who already had kids. So as for Susan, he didn't know if she specifically was the person for him or not. Because of her reputation around town, he knew a little bit about her background and where she came from and how other relationships she's been in have worked out and how they've been. So he also just didn't know specifically if she was the person he wanted to settle down with. So Tom decided, in order to tell her all of this, he needed to basically write an anonymous letter and send it to Susan, explaining all of this and breaking up with her over a letter. Now, this letter was sent at the beginning of October 1994, and Susan has said that it was the most loneliest that she ever felt in her life. So you're in this marriage that is an on and off again. You're slowly starting to semi-realize that it's not the best for you. And then you have this boyfriend off to the side who you fall in love with, just for this boyfriend to be like, yeah, no, you're not my girlfriend. I actually don't have these feelings for you. Sorry, gotta go. And so she did say that it was the loneliest that she had ever felt. So at the end of October that same year, October 25th, Susan is found crying on the footsteps of someone's home. When officers come to the house, she tells officers that a black man carjacked her car with her 3-year-old Michael and 14-year-old Alex in the back seat. Officers immediately start working on this case and doing all they can to catch the man who did this. For the following 9 days, they put Susan and David in front of the media, where the two of them are begging for the man who committed this crime to bring their children back. These two are doing interviews, talks, media, press, whatever they can to put their face out there and put Alex and Michael's name out there. And then while they're also doing this, Susan is continuing to be interviewed by officials for any information that she is able to remember and give to them to help this case. Now, during these 9 days, officials start to feel weird about the situation. Each time Susan is asked about what happened, there would be either new details that were shared or old details would be left out of this story. There was also just a lot of holes left in her stories after she shared, and then when she was asked to fill in those holes, her stories would either not line up, or they would just lead to more holes, and then the cycle would just kind of continue. She took several polygraph tests that all came back inconclusive. She also kept asking during this time if Tom was coming to see her, which I think was the biggest red flag for officials, because, like, your children are missing and you're worried about your boyfriend. Like, you should be worried about your children. But it was enough. She asked enough for officials to be like, yo, what's going on here? Like, you're not asking about your kids. Like, you're not asking us where your kids are or where we are in the process. You're more worried about if your boyfriend's going to come see you. So finally, after 9 days, and with the pressure of being questioned and having to keep up with the lies she was telling, Susan finally comes clean with what actually happened. Susan says that on October 25th, she was driving her car with her two kids in the back seat, and a couple of weeks ago, she had received this letter from Tom ending their relationship, and like I said, she was feeling the loneliest she has ever felt, and she was also feeling very suicidal. She said it was the worst time that she's ever felt. She said while driving, she made the decision to drive the car into the water at John D. Lake, but then she backed out. Instead, she made the decision to get out of the car, left her children in the car, and watched as in neutral, the car rolled into the lake with her children inside. She gives officers the location of the car, and a scuba team is able to locate the car and confirm her story when they find Michael and Alex's bodies in the backseat. So now that she admits to the crime, we go to trial. Susan's team is trying to say that she had a dependent personality disorder and severe depression, saying that her want and her need for a stable relationship like the one she thought she had with Tom overcame her moral judgment in committing this crime. The other side did a reenactment of the car sinking, where they used a similar type of car to see how long it took for the car to sink, and it took 6 minutes. So that means that Susan stood there for 6 minutes and watched as the car slowly started to sink and then continued to sit around as her kids were drowning underneath. And then they talked about the 9 days after their death, how she made the nation feel horrible for her, had all of these people searching for her missing kids, and did all of these interviews, all of these talks, all of this press, when she knew where her kids were the whole time and kept this to herself for 9 days. The motive that they worked with was from the letter that Tom wrote her about not wanting kids. They said that they figured the motive was that because Susan wanted this relationship with Tom so badly, that she was obviously willing to kill her own kids so that she could potentially have a relationship with Tom. So July 22nd, 1995, Susan was found guilty of these murders, but instead of the death penalty, she got life in prison. Since her time in prison, Susan is still getting into trouble. She has had several disciplinary actions done, like loss of visitation, loss of canteen, loss of telephone privileges, because of things like drug use or drug possession and self-mutilization. From 2017 to 2019, at least 6 times she was transferred to other facilities for outpatient treatments, and the reason or the levels of these issues have never been made public. But there has also been 2 different prison guards who have been fired for admitting to having sexual relationships with Susan, which also resulted with Susan being transferred multiple different times. But even in all of these situations, she tells people that she wasn't at fault and that things just look wrong. And she tries to talk herself out of situations. So even after all of this, even after all of these, you know, like drug use in the jail or drug possession, she always tries to make herself look like the victim. She always says, I'm not being looked at right. This isn't my fault. And so even after all this time in jail, she's continuing to get in trouble and she's continuing to not take any of the blame. She also still holds on to her innocence, saying that she didn't plan the drowning to happen, that she wasn't in the right mindset at the time, that this wasn't a pre-motivated or something that she had been working on for a while, that it really was just a driving down the road and she had made a split-second decision that then turned into another split-minute decision, and she stands by that today. Susan is still serving time in South Carolina and is actually up for parole in November of this year. And so I saw that. Well, it said 2024. And so it took me a little bit to actually figure out the month because I was like, oh, this is going to be a cool little like wrap up the story to like share what happened on her parole. But it happens in November. So I'm going to try to write myself a note and hopefully remind myself about this in November so that we can go back and look at this. So that's episode 144. Literally yesterday, I was scrolling on TikTok and my sister, well, there's a lot of people, but specifically my sister, will send me a lot of crime TikToks about different cases and stuff. And so this was actually one that I found. And it was a girl who had posted, like, here's the top serial killer from each state. And so I saved the video off to the side because I was like, well, that'd be kind of a little cool, kind of, not that we'll do it all for 50 states, but like for the states that we maybe haven't covered that top serial killer, that might be a fun little series to do. And anyways, so South Carolina was Susan Smith. And so that was one of those cases where I was like, I totally forgot about Susan Smith. I've heard about her and know her story. But it was, so this is how, well, the wild world of crime, because there's so many different crime stories out there. But this one in particular was funny that yesterday, because I didn't know exactly what I was going to be writing about today, so I didn't know that Susan Smith was this week's episode. But yesterday, as I was laying in bed, I remember thinking, oh, Susan Smith, how have I forgotten to tell her story? And then to wake up this morning and see that that was what this week's episode was, I was like, ah, what are the chances that, you know, connection? Anyways, so South Carolina, there you go. Hopefully we'll have to see schedules and everything with Steven. So we'll have to see if we're together next week or not. But yeah, episode 144. I said the number last week of how many we have left. I know it's under 10. It may be 7 or 6 now. Episodes that we have left in this season, which doesn't mean anything to you. But we're going to continue doing the 50 states, or the rest of them that we have left. Do the math. I can't. But yeah, we're almost done. And so then who knows? And so these are things that I look at. And so like, I see those videos where I'm like, here's the top serial killer of each state. And I look at it and I think, oh, that would be a good series. But if you have an idea for something, each season is about 30 episodes. So it would need to be a rather lengthy series that I could find 30 episodes for. But if so those are things that like you can email us or leave us a comment on any of our social medias. Those are the type of things that we like to see. So give us a like, subscribe, share, do all of those things. Thank you guys so much for listening and continuing to listen. Like always, this is Sam and this is Crimeology.